All right, so thanks for joining us. I'm Megan Fox with Malama Kauai, and today we're going to talk to Derek Kiabu. He is the farm manager for the Kauai Agricultural Research and Extension Station here at on Kauai for CTAR, which is UH's College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources. So lots of acronyms. Thanks, Derek, for joining us today. And
Mahalo for having me, Megan. I'm excited to be on the show, and actually I'm new to this position here, so excited still yet to be at the Kauai Agriculture Research Station and on Kauai too.
So what brought you to Kauai in general? Was it this opportunity or you wanted to come here? We're excited to have you on island, so.
It was this opportunity. Few years ago, I came up to Kauai and visited the station, and saw it's a really beautiful place. We're at the top of Wailua Homesteads. We have about 230 acres, about maybe 90 that we actively manage. And I seen the place a long time ago and just thought it was really beautiful. And then I saw the job posting come up, and I kind of thought, well, it kind of fits me, and I would like to do that. So that's how it all started. And I just moved here in October of last year. So I've been in this role and on this island for 9 months now. And yeah, I love it.
Awesome. And I was like so excited to see you take the job, because I've known of other work. Do you want to give our listeners like a background of all the other cool stuff you've done in your career? Because you've worked at some really cool places on other islands and done some great work.
I've had a lot of jobs, I feel like, which is kind of funny. But I guess first of all, I guess, coming out, I'm an alumni of CTAR. And after that, actually, I was gonna intern with somebody who had a permaculture farm up in Pupuke on the north shore of Oahu. And then that internship never really worked out the timing, so I ended up just randomly doing logistical kind of help for an organization that was into community-based economic development and had no background in community-based economic development or working in community or talking about social justice issues, environmental justice issues. And I really learned a lot, and I got to go all over the state and met a lot of cool people. So because I was learning a lot and I liked it, I stayed there.
Is that Ma'o?
It's called HACBID,
Okay.
Hawaii Alliance for Community-Based Economic Development. I got to meet some people from Kauai a long time ago, actually. This was about 25 years ago.
Wow.
But that's where I met Gary and Kukui from Ma'o at the time. Gary was working with the Hawaii Community Loan Fund, which was like a sister organization of HACBID, and starting Ma'o really at that time. But I stayed at HACBID, and then this might be kind of a long part of the story, so good thing we
It's
got.
all good. It's
But
interesting.
I stayed there. Then about 5 years later, well, I've done all kinds of stuff. I knew I always wanted knew always knew I wanted to get back into agriculture. So I worked part time with Frank Sakia on Oahu in Waimanalo. He's like a tropical
That
fruit.
Frankie's nursery?
Yeah, Frankie's Nursery.
Right on. Everybody knows
And
about him. He's
yeah, and that's still my love. Yeah, like tropical fruits and stuff. Did that. Then after that, at HACBID, we helped Ma'o facilitate a youth food sovereignty conference in 2005, and that was the sort of the event that made me realize like I wanted to go back into agriculture. Then I applied for grad school in Michigan, went to a program around community food systems, and I didn't finish that program, but I spent 2.5 years in Michigan and learned a lot and was dying to get back home. And when I got back home, I worked out at Ma'o for 3.5 years or so. Before I left for Michigan, Ma'o was just about 5 acres going on to 10. And then when I had come back in 2010, they were farming 24 acres or something like that. And so That's where I really had a lot of first time, a lot of really field production experience of working on the farm for, doing organic veggie production. And I mean, along the way, my boss at Hackbed was Bob Agris, and my boss at Mao was Gary, and those are two of the best mentors could have had coming up. I still keep in touch with them, and both of them are still going, doing awesome things.
Yeah, I know Gary and Kukui pretty well, and they do incredible work, and they're so inspiring. There's good people all around, you know?
Yeah, and they're still cranking, yeah.
Yep.
And
But
I think
I think they're like the largest organic farm in the state, or one of them, I think, at this point, too.
they've got to be. I mean, they do have a lot of land, and
Yeah.
they are ramping up production. So yeah, it sounds like it.
Very cool.
And I think I ran into you about, I don't know, you were on the, you guys were on the bigger
Decade ago
one.
or so. Yeah, it's a field trip.
But after that, I had gone to college on the Big Island and in Hilo for undergrad for a little while. And what happened was, I was at Ma'o, and Kohala Center had an opening for a high school, running a high school internship program, and starting a farm up in Honoka'a. And I went and did that. Was returned like a return to Honoka'a, where I had friends from college. And then that eventually ended up taking over the adult beginning farmer training program up there. And so we had that, and I worked with some really cool people running our farm in Honoka'a. And then I moved over to Go Farm. And then that was when Go Farm started up on Hawaii Island. This is getting funny already, but like 3 years later, there was a cacao farm starting up on the north shore of Oahu, and it sounded really cool to start working just with plants, yeah, geeking out on plants, and then go be on the north shore. So I went and did that, and then that only lasted a year and a half. It was a startup that really didn't last, but it was up above Haleiwa Town, and it was a super beautiful place to be too. And then after that didn't work out, I went back to the Big Island and worked for a company that was managing farms, a lot of tropical fruit trees, some coffee, a lot of mac nuts, kind of conventional style. And I did that for a while, actually. And then, yeah, this farm manager job came up, and I really thought, after, working on smaller organic farms, doing vegetable production, doing larger scale conventional production, and having that kind of stuff, that I thought I could do this job. I had managed, small groups of people and stuff like that. And that's, yeah, a long story, but that's how I came to Kauai end of last year.
No, I think that's great, 'cause you know what I've realized over the years? I mean, I feel really blessed 'cause I get to work with a ton of farms, and you take it for granted, like, 'cause I'm not a farmer, right? So I'm not an expert in agricultural production, but because I've seen so many farms and all the different things they've tried, what's worked, what's not worked, I actually had to have a lot of expertise I developed over the years. Just if someone wants to do a greenhouse, I'm like, oh, so don't do it like that. So and so did that, and it fell down in this weather and that weather. And you see things in hot climates and wet climates, and it just gives you this real diversity of experience. And it sounds like that's kind of the path you've been on too, is you've been in so many different environments and picked up so many different things along the way that it really adds to your toolbox to say, like, you know, I do want to pick your brain about, before we move on to your sitar job, Frankie's nursery. I love, he always has the cool plants before everyone else does. Were there any cool tips or tricks that you got maybe from that experience about fruit tree production, grafting, air layering, anything neat you want to share with folks?
I guess at that time, the thing that blew my mind the most was, Frankie was finding dwarf root stocks of plants, and then grafting stuff onto there, and then grafting stuff onto there sometimes. So he would get exactly what he wanted sometimes, grafting onto dwarf root stock. Yeah, but I mean, the other part that really blew me away was the guy really loved what he did, and he was really good at it, and he did it for a really long time, and he's still going, and he's still, has all kinds of cool stuff and has expanded a lot. And so to see somebody like I always thought growing up I wanted to have a farm, and it's a long time later and I don't. But I work on one,
Same. Yeah, no, it's hard. I mean, with the land prices, I think a lot of people are in that world, you know.
Yeah, especially on this island. I mean, I came from Big Island where, I mean,
You
cost
can
of
afford stuff, kind of,
yeah,
over
yeah,
there. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
we lose a lot of people to Big Island buying over there. Yeah, it must have been a shocker moving. You know, even the rental prices, everything is so different over here, for
Yeah,
sure.
I almost didn't come because of that.
Really? I bet you it was very hard.
Yeah.
I think that's why CTAR has a hard time finding and keeping people too, because Kauai, just like everyone else, Kauai is a difficult place to get that. So I'm gonna jump into a quick break here, and we'll just come right back. So thank you. You're listening to KKCR on the Malama Kauai Show. Megan Fox here with Derek Kiabu of CTAR. He's their new-ish farm manager, and we're just kind of talking about what's happening over there. So you did mention that the new dean really wants to kind of reinvigorate these ag research stations, because once upon a time, I mean, they had a lot going on. You know, and they were kind of a hub for agriculture in the community. And over the years, you know, they got a little older. They got kind of less cool. I don't know if it's the word, but like less engaged with the community. So now that there's new leadership, I mean, what are some of these reinvigorations you see coming around? What's the intention?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think, it's going to be different everywhere. I guess I would start off by saying that CTAR has about 20 research and extension stations and offices throughout the state. They're on Oahu, Kauai, Molokai, Maui, and Hawaii Island. They have extension offices like we do have in Hilo. There's one on Maui and Kahului. There's two on, or maybe three on Hawaii Island, Hilo, Waimea, and possibly Kona. And
Wow.
there's one connected to the Molokai Research Station too. But I think they planned that out pretty strategically, where the extension stations are in different climates, are on different islands. So there's one up in Volcano on Hawaii Island. There's one up, or two actually, up in Waimea, Lalamilo area, one in South Kona. We got one on Kauai here. We actually have a rice paddy station down the hill at the bottom of Wailua. It's inactive right now, but used to be growing rice and taro in the
Oh.
past. There's one in Kula Maui. So, we can grow some different things in different climates, and I think a lot of it will be dependent on the climate, but also, what the needs, hopefully the needs of the local farmers and the communities are.
What are some of your immediate projects? I know you've been busy like cleaning up collections and trying to see what's actually up there in the farm. Was kind of last time I chatted with you, something you had just gotten into.
Yeah, I guess what you started off with saying was, yeah, from what I hear, there were 16 ag techs working up at the station at some point in the past. And I think due to no fault of CTAR's at all, I mean, it's just sort of, we've witnessed, I'm having a hard time saying it, but like research get privatized and moved into the private sector, right? So, before all of that happened, there was a lot of public research. UH was pumping out some really, really world-class stuff. Jim Brubaker with Super Sweet Number 9 corn, Lucena, which is what we call Haulekoa, but it is actually a super useful plant globally. Tomatoes that you can still see in the you can still get from Kiwalo, Komohana. Those are great genetics. I mean, a lot has happened to Hawaii. A lot of seems like a disease or a pest comes in a lot, but even people today that are breeding modern contemporary tomatoes, they are using genetics that the breeders from the 50s, 60s made out of UH. So, I think it's a sort of a sign of the times. Support for agriculture in Hawaii, it is what it is. It has a lot of challenges. There's opportunities, but it has a lot of challenges. And so, the public sector research has sort of may have gone down a little. And I think a lot of times too, there was also a lot of focus on trying to get grant funding to continue programs and things like that.
Yeah, which I feel like is still a constant battle, right? When you want to get funding to do a new project, and even more so recently with like the way the funding landscape is right now, with an administration change and different laws and rules moving around, economy shakeups, even the private funding sector start shrinking a little bit. It's a little crazy. I mean, there's a lot of your projects right now tied to funding, or is it just tied to state funding with like kind of more stable or?
It so far has been more like what the Land Grant University and Cooperative Research and Extension is. It's a sort of a partnership between federal government, state government, county government, where everyone we our funding comes from those three resources. So that's how it's cooperative in that term. And so at least our positions here seem to be, for the most part, pretty stable. But some of the projects that we support here, they were grant funded and they were affected. So, we're a little insulated here. We work for the university, but we also work for the state of Hawaii. So we are state up here.
What were, if you don't mind sharing, what were some of the projects that did lose funding, just so folks kind of know?
I think James was working on some kind of melon trial, and I think something might have happened with that. But like Noah Lincoln has his Ulu trial over here. He has a small orchard over here, and it's still going. But I know Noah was pretty heavily impacted by the cuts that he had, and not to just specifically this project, but to stuff that he was doing or he is doing. So.
Yeah, I know he lost funding for some graduate research assistants and all kinds of stuff.
And then so here, we have a new dean, Dr. Parwinder Grewal, and he's been around for, I want to say, maybe a year longer than I have. So he's relatively new too, but he's made his rounds and sounds like he's been received pretty favorably. I think he does a good job of listening and asking questions. He has a new vision for a lot of CTAR, but also for the ag research stations over here. And so, on top of thinking it was a cool job to do in a cool place, I got a cool boss running the whole College of Agriculture that wants to
Hi.
support this. So I feel like it's a really good time to be here, and I'm excited for that. And yeah, some of the projects we're working on over here. So, we have research projects that come and go. They can last a long time, they can last a short time. And then there's some legacy projects here. Probably a couple that I was really interested in was the kalo and the awa. Kauai Ag Station had, from what I hear, a lot of the collections throughout the state came out of here. The people that worked here sort of got them. Ramon Dela Cruz, who's still alive, I think he's in his 90s. He lives up in Wailua. I got to meet him a couple times, but he was telling us that at one time Lion Arboretum wanted to get rid of what their collection that they had. So he said, "No, let's save it. Let's bring it to Kauai." So they brought it over here and tried to get more over time, and also tried to get it out into the community. So Kauai gets credited sometimes for sort of putting that collection together to some degree. And then we have the Ava collection here. When I got here, we were coming out of COVID, and there were, believe it or not, just two people working here during COVID. So things got ahead of us here. But
They
for
have
the
a history of like legendary Ava parties too. It's like
That's
this
what I heard.
legendary myth of the history of the research station. But
That's what I want to do.
right.
Actually, that's what I want to do. So, who did I talk to? I asked Noah Lincoln if we could have cuttings of the Ava collection, and he got some from Ed Johnston on Big Island, and then we propagated them, we grew them out, and then actually just last week or the week before that, we had the Waipa interns up, high school and college interns up here, and so we gave them a tour, and they actually helped us put the collection back in the ground. So we got right now 12 varieties of Ava in the ground. We got a couple years ahead of us to wait, but yeah, I'm most excited about sort of taking care of the Kahlo collection, along with, after everyone that came along, Emily Kirk has been taking care of the collection in the greenhouse, and then we were finally able to just put it in the ground last November, December or so. And actually, we're coming up on getting ready to harvest the first generation that was put back in the ground. And then we're going to be replanting the second generation, or at least the second generation for me, out in the ground. And the intent of that is to maintain the genetics, and then get them out to people who want to grow them. Yeah. So, we're all pretty rusty to trying to harvest this much. It's not a lot. There's just a lot of varieties that we need to pay attention to. We're still trying to, there's still some with questionable IDs on them, and we're seeing different expressions coming out up in Wailua compared to other places. We've had a couple people come up and help us identify them, and there's definitely characteristics that aren't common everywhere. So, but yeah, it's cool to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, any. What's the coolest Ava you've seen up there? Is there any like new interesting one that you hadn't seen before or more rare?
Yeah, there's been some Kumakua. I haven't even heard of that one or seen that one before. And I think we've got, well, we got one Mapule who's still in the greenhouse. That one came from a different source later. So we've got
Nice.
12, and we got Mapule going in. But then other than that, we should have, it's hard to tell like how
I
many
got that one.
there really are. Yeah, like we have lost some and stuff like that, but we've got yeah, Honokaneiki, Hanakapiai,
We have Hiva too, if you don't have that one. I can.
Eva. Yeah,
Yep. Hiva's a cool one. That's my favorite one, just because it's beautiful to look at.
I drink a lot of, usually if I drink, I'll drink a lot of like Maakea. Kind of a middle of the road one. I like that. But yeah, I like drinking Ava too.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, you're from Big Island, right? That's like,
Yeah.
you
Well, I'm
got
from yeah. Well, I'm from Oahu actually.
Okay.
I've been on Big Island, lived there off and on for probably 12 years altogether.
Okay.
Hilo, Kapua.
I always consider you a big in the Big Island boy category because ever I've known you've been over there.
Yeah.
It's great in Hawaii, though. Everywhere can be home after a while.
Yeah.
Cool. And then how many varieties of Kahlo do you guys have? How's that collection coming along?
Oh, I have to check with Emily on the exact numbers, but probably 60 something Hawaiian
Wow.
ones, and probably another 30, 30 common ones, and ones from like Oceania, Samoa, even Palau, the Philippines, probably some from Asia and stuff like that too. So I would say it's, yeah, probably 90, maybe a little more,
Wow.
maybe a little less.
That's awesome. And these are cool plants because you don't really have to worry about like things cross-pollinating and like changing their genetics, right? Because they're just like vegetatively propagated plants
Yeah,
that make the
yeah.
collections like easier to manage, you know?
Yeah, I think when we're trying to keep an eye out for the ones that have runners on it, just so that they don't come back another generation later, run into something that looks similar, and then we pick it up and mislabel it. But
Right. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
That stuff's hard. Some of them look so similar, it's really easy to get them mixed up. And then one quick question. You mentioned something about like Hollycoa research, and in my brain I'm like, whoa, you can actually do something positive with that? Because I think everybody's probably overrun with it. I mean, well, what are a quick couple of takeaways on that? I mean, aside from killing it, which everyone feels like they're striving to do, is there something useful locally, anything anybody's done with that?
I mean, one thing I could see would be maybe like biochar, but when you think of
Yeah.
like permaculture plants, if you use Glycidia, it's sort of the same thing. I would say it's a lot more invasive though. So, but globally, it's used for firewood, for
It's so
forage.
renewable, right? Yeah.
Yeah, for forage, firewood, probably living fence posts and things like that. So, I mean, here I could see how you could use it for biochar or firewood. But I mentioned Dr. Brubaker, and Dr. Brubaker had a sterile variety of it. So, when you talk about agroforestry trees, it's a nitrogen fixing tree.
Right.
It's a little bigger, and if it's sterile, then it could be a
I think
really
that's a key,
great
yeah.
tree. Yeah.
All right, talking to Derek Kiabu, gonna take a quick little break. We'll be right back. Little break. Welcome back. You're on KKCR, Malama Kauai Show, and we are talking to Derek Kiabu from the Sitar Station up in Wailua. He is their new-ish farm manager. And we were just talking about some of the projects he's working on, the Kalo and Ava collections, and talking a little bit about Hollycoa and different ways to use it. Yeah, that's great. I mean, what else do you guys have going on? I know you have had a sweet potato trial. They've done banana, like bunchy top virus resistant banana varieties. What I mean, you guys have a huge parcel. You got a lot of cool stuff up there. What else is going
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to dig up from
on?
the past too, but
Yeah, I
just right now, Ted Radovich and Emily Kirk have a dwarf coconut collection up here, and unfortunately we got some CRB up at the top of Wailua. So
Oh.
originally the intent was to try and select varieties that were good for either the meat or for the water. But right now we're just trying to hold ground here. I guess the lucky thing is that because they're dwarf, what we've been doing is we've been netting the trees and stuff like that. So we have a small dwarf coconut collection. We have Noah Lincoln's Ulu collection, not collection, but trial. We have old tea planting from I don't know how long ago, but like camellia drinking tea.
Oh, nice.
There was a grapefruit trial before.
I remember we used to harvest a bunch of old grapefruit, and you guys had a really cool breadnut tree there in the back, and
I think we got that
really
one.
old orchards, but they were still pumping.
The station, I think, was started in about the mid-60s or so. And so, it's really cool, but a lot of things are really old. And I think, sort of the state of all of the stations, or Sitar was pretty fortunate, I think, since 2022, working with the system and working with the legislature. They were able to provide Sitar with monies to modernize our facilities and also to work on things that had deferred maintenance kind of thing. So yeah, so through support from the University of Hawaii and the Ledge, where Sitar was able to get support for like Waimanalo, Poamoho, I think Hilo and stuff like that. What else is here? We've got Emily put in a cacao orchard, I think about 8 years ago, and that's producing. Lydgate Farms has been helping us manage that farm and or manage the plot. We still manage it, but they come help us harvest and ferment for us and then help us take data for all kinds of different things. We have
Nice.
a little,
Sitar
yeah, well, maybe one day, maybe one day.
chocolate.
It's not a lot of beans that come out of it, but
Right.
and then there's a a small flock of goats or herd of goats up here. We're trying to work with the new livestock nutritionist on Oahu who wants to get a breeding flock of sheep up to Kauai so that the whole state can have some. And I'm really hoping that happens. Like a lot of places for us in Hawaii, with short staff and a lot of land, a lot of Babesias have come into to the station up here. So there's some areas that are left that I would love to clear to take back and hold for the future. And the sheep could be a part of that.
Yeah. Our new ag park, I was pretty amazed because the Midlers had hundreds, if not thousands of acres out there. And the areas that the cattle were running in are the areas that aren't overrun with Babesia because they just kept eating it and cutting it down.
All
So
right.
people like to talk a lot of smack about like cattle agriculture and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, you look at all these, like even some ADC lands, no knock on ADC, but, if you don't have something on the land, nature's gonna plant, and they're gonna plant it full of invasives, and with how fast they grow, I mean, and the cost to take them down, you're looking at like $5,000 a tree or more in a lot of these cases. So
Yeah.
that's huge for people managing large swaths of land to like keep it under control once it's there, or help get it under control. Do they have
Oh,
sheep that like don't get hoof rot? Because I heard from a lot of people, it's why people aren't doing so much sheep on Kauai is how many wet areas we have, and they just haven't been handling it well.
I think that would still be a challenge. Would be
Yeah.
hair sheep, but still, all the things would still be a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm just
especially up
curious.
here. I still feel like I'm in Hilo a lot of the times. Like I look up.
Yeah, I bet.
Every day it's raining a little bit, and I love it. That's why it's so beautiful up here. But
Right, and then you don't have to spend so much time like worrying about watering and irrigation and chasing things and watching things die from having a little drought spell, kind of takes care of itself a little bit. So you guys have all this land, so many new projects, so many existing projects, so many ancient projects. Is there like a strategic plan or like a big design of what you hope to do with this station in the future, or is that kind of like develop as you talk to like your constituents and the farmers and the people there and what they're excited about, or
I think it would be a balance of both. I think the most important thing would be to engage with community so we can do things that are impactful and needed and relevant for Kauai, obviously. There definitely are things that I want to do. I think luckily for me, the Kahlo collection was something that is a legacy collection here. The Ava is the same thing. It was a legacy collection here, so I can do that. But I think it might hopefully open up new opportunities for like value-added production kind of things where, something else can happen here. We can be a resource. I think the main thing to look the main way to look at it is that we're a resource for the agricultural community, and how it gets put to use would be the question. I would love to put a durian orchard in here. I think durian has a lot of potential.
I
I
know
have
Ken Love's been talking about that for as long as I've known him, that we very much underproduce durian. It has
Yeah.
a super high cost. It's just the investment of waiting all the years for it to start production, but
Yeah.
it's like a bidding war when people have durian fruit out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I bought some from Maria for like $9 a pound, and one fruit's gonna be two pounds at least. Yeah, so
Yeah.
but I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I think it has good potential for Hawaii, for the climates in Hawaii. Once you know what you have genetics wise and if there's a market for it, I feel like when I was this is one of the things that I saw at Frankie's a long time ago, was that he just had a list of people to call when his durians were going off, and he would just go down the line and call them, and they'd come. And I never heard stories of there's sort of like a cult like following for durian. Yeah, it's like it's
Yeah.
a long time to get used to it, but once you like it and you have good ones, then people people really go after it, and it's hard to find, and you don't know what you're gonna get, and
Yeah.
all the things. So, and I think there's yeah, so I think there's good potential for that.
Yeah, my Connie loves them. I don't let him go past the driveway with them. He has to eat them
Yeah.
all in the
Yeah.
driveway.
But I
But
had some really good ones that taste like, I mean, at the end, tastes like butterscotch or something, you know? And you wouldn't,
yeah.
yeah, so really good. So we, I mean, there's a huge demand globally for it.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's growing really, really fast.
I think it's more so to me in my mind, like it's viable because of the price per pound. Like we've watched, our inputs go up, our transportation costs go up, our labor costs go up, if you can even find any labor. It's getting harder and harder for farmers to be able to make money off bananas and sweet potatoes and things that are like under $2 a pound, So if you can, especially orchards are so much less labor.
Yeah.
Once you install them, you gotta wait. So there's like that opportunity cost, I guess, of waiting for your orchard to grow up. But once it's there, it's like a lot less labor. And when you get things that are bringing in $9 or more a pound, it does make a difference. I've seen, I think it was on Big Island, peach palm, I think, is another one that's really underdeveloped on Kauai that we could do really well with. Bamboo shoots. There's a lot of things that bring a higher profit margin, might take a little more work to get to the
Yeah.
market, but yeah.
Yeah, I saw some people on Big Island FedExing Heart of Palm to, you know, fancy restaurants on the continent, and I think they're getting pretty good money for it. But
Very
I think
good.
it's that, yeah, growing a high quality product and finding a high-end market is, I feel like, where there's larger margins to be made.
Right. And it's interesting because it's like, in my work, I'm always really focused on food security for like our own people too, right? So there's this trade-off of like we want to be food secure and not just focused on these crops that are gonna go off island. But if that makes your farm sustainable so you can continue to produce, right? Like money is a part of the equation there in sustainability. If it's not financially sustainable, you're not going to keep the farm around forever, just volunteering. And that's probably why so many of our farms are so small too, because most of them are part-time endeavors. So to be able to see people take it to that full-time level where they're super profitable, it's a dream for a lot of people, but it's different crops like this and the work of research places like CTAR that can help find some of those like economic wins, but also like the genetic wins that make it easy to produce these things, and they're not just gonna get it wiped out when the next disease comes through too.
Exactly.
Have you guys been working on, I know we had avocado lace bug really wiped out a lot of people's avocados. That was a big one. Did your avocados at the station get hit? Do you have any information on management or how that's coming along? Is it getting worse? Because we've seen like the market just drop out. The availability of avocados is crazy.
You know what? I mean, like I live Kapahi, the top of Kapahi or upper Kapahi, and I just take back roads to the station up at the Wailua, and honestly, I don't get out a whole lot. I don't
Yeah.
really know that I see a lot of avocado trees driving by, because I know you can definitely see them when you see them, you know, especially
Yeah.
with lace bug. But up here we might have maybe one or two avocados only randomly. So I'm not really familiar with the situation on this island, but I definitely know that you know, Oahu, when I was on Big Island, had a lot of it. I feel like CTAR did a lot of research and extension work into avocado lace bug. I forget what they were talking about. There was something I want to say that was approved for use. It wasn't organic, but you could use it like once or twice a year or something. But the trees, you know, I guess when I was in Hilo, I seen more of those, and that was maybe, you know, 3 or 4 years. And I feel like the trees would bounce back, and a lot of times you would just see trees would just choke flowers on them. but I haven't been around avocados for the past couple of years, I want to say. So,
Fair question. So you mentioned maybe some pet projects that you might be interested in. If you had, your own, other than durian, are there other things that you would be super stoked on trying out over there? Or?
I think that would probably be the one.
Yeah. What about the rice patties? Do you see them ever bringing those back to rice, or do you think the birds would just, people have
I
given
think
up on rice?
the birds will get them, but yeah, so people in Sitar are doing are working with people that are producing rice, and actually, believe it or not, there is a rice industry in Hawaii. It's really small, but it's people that are primarily growing seed rice. It's not GMO or nothing that I know of. But growing it for other companies on the
Producers.
mainland. There's some on Kauai here.
Yeah, the no Uncle Jerry does rice.
Yeah, that's exactly one person that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Actually, Uncle Jerry grows it. I think I don't want to talk too much. I think it's for someone on the continent though, but yeah, from talking to him, I got to see his place. He's got nets up around it, super high tech. They might be working with some researchers out of Japan, so they have all kinds of sensors out there taking all kinds of data and stuff.
Oh.
But he said he likes it. It's sort of like contract growing for them. He's got all his fruits, and I think for him, the long gone market just bottomed out. There's no demand for that. Actually, he just stopped by today and gave us some lychees, and it's July, and his lychees are, ready now, super late, but I think he just got done harvesting his rice maybe in the last couple of weeks or so. But
Well, and the parakeets is another one. That's something I've seen wipe out. Like our fruit, we can't even we run like a summer feeding program and buy a ton of produce. We had to ship in fruit from off island. We had to get pineapples from Maui, because
yeah.
we can't even get enough papayas here, which we used to always be able to get. It's like a lot of people are, I have some farmers who are abandoning full orchards of lychee, rambutan, because it's not worth investing if the birds keep eating 75% of your crop. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. Yeah, I came from Big Island where we had everything else, but parrots that would eat your fruits. But I came here and was kind of bummed actually, because yeah, we got several lychee trees here with no fruits on them. They used to grow papayas up here. No more papayas, no more.
So you guys have parakeets up at the station then too that come by?
I see them around, yeah.
Yeah. It's always that scout. You gotta get the scout. So I just keep telling the farmers because I've been trying a lot of and I know you guys are actually next door to the Invasive Species Committee, right? Aren't they on the same station property too? So they're kind of probably lean on them for that thing, that end of things. But yeah, that the parakeets have had a huge impact. So I'm interested because it sounds like most of the stuff that you guys are focused on isn't super attractive to the parakeets. And I wonder if that was like by design or just by luck.
Probably by luck. I think those are the ones that are left.
Yeah, I haven't seen a meeting like Ulu Kakao that they did start like hollowing into people's lilikoi and even climbing around the ground and eating like green beans off farmers. So it's been very interesting. Cool.
Yeah,
So anyway.
I'm super stoked on the Kahlo. Wanna definitely support and perpetuate the Kahlo genetics, the Ava, and then if we can do something with the other thing, I'd be really happy with that. And those are more reasons why I wanted to come up here and work on those things.
Especially kalo on Kauai, like we have, I think you've been to some of our kalo farmer dinners, like met some of the kalo farmers, and Kauai is like one of the number one producers of kalo, so that's so central to our culture and who we are as an island that it's cool to know that we're keeping those safe. I remember we tried to copy Limahuli's collection at one point. And we put it at Ke Kula Niihau, and it didn't get watered and died. And we replicated at Kawakini, and the pigs came through and eat them. And then we put them at our farm in Kalihiwai at the time, and the blight came through and wiped them out.
Yeah, craziness.
So they're
Yeah.
really hard when you have this like kuleana to take care of these real special plants, and one disease or one batch of pigs or something could wipe them all out. I mean, what do you think your strategy is? And like, are you guys gonna copy that collection once you have a whole handle on it and put it other places? Or how are you gonna keep spreading and doing the outreach
Yeah.
there?
Yeah, we've run into challenges here too where we've lost a few and stuff, but I mean, I think that is it, that it should be in the hands of the community, yeah. And it should be replicated. So, Sitar has the collection in different shapes and forms across the state, I think. I'm pretty
Yeah.
sure Oahu's got a lot of it. Molokai's got a lot of it. I'm not sure about Maui. But I wouldn't be surprised. But beyond just sitar having it, I mean, it is it's not ours. It's all these Kupuna Kalo varieties from a long time ago, and we are part of a network of just trying to maintain all these different varieties. So there's just redundancy out in the community, and that's what we all need, so that when it does happen to somebody, they can go and get it again. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's hard too, because like even you have different people calling Kalo different things too, and
Oh
not
yeah.
being able to ID them. What's your like go-to source if you see one Kalo and you're like, I don't know what kind this is? Like, where do you go to kind of try to start to ID it? Like, what do you think feel like is like one of the best resources?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah, I think Bulletin 84 is kind of one of the early ones, UH Bulletin 84. There's no pictures at all. Some of the descriptors are wrong. But then there's for a little while, Wes Yap had put a Kupuna Kalo website together and had pictures, so that was a little
Yeah.
helpful too. I think that's still up. But from I got to work with Kaiana Runnels on Hawaii Island. We overlapped when we were working at the Kohala Center Farm, and
Nice.
Kaiana and Keahi and Kona, Nick Francisco, Anthony Deluz. Those are all people that were sort of mentored under Uncle Jerry. And
Yeah.
so, I mean, you can, yeah, they can just, they can see, identify varieties from far away, and as they walk up, they can pick out the finer details. And actually, we've had Kaiana and Anthony up here and help. Those were the people that helped us identify things, confirm things, or tell us, hey, this is different from everywhere else, or actually even that we had stuff mislabeled actually. So I think it was with, I forget what it was, but we had it named as something else, and he said it was maybe Loa Keokea or something, and that he was stoked to see it because the last time he saw that was a long time ago.
Nice.
Yeah.
I know they don't have, they have like Mangoes of Hawaii, and they have those big, beautiful illustrated picture posters. Is there
Yeah.
anything like that for Kalo? I mean, even as we're bringing up and teaching these kids and stuff, those kinds of posters are awesome in a classroom or to get people familiar with
Yeah.
things.
From what I hear, like they're supposed to be working with Auntie, I think Auntie Penny Levin on Maui has been working on putting something together. Started with like Uncle Jerry and with all Kaiana them, but they even got the like the Royal Horticultural Society color cards where they were, using a standardized system for identifying green. Yeah, like this is this kind of green, so it's not just
Wow, that's
light
cool.
green, but it's a certain kind of green. Yeah. And then and taking pictures and stuff. So I'm not sure when that's supposed to come out. I think I don't know. Hopefully it comes out soon so everybody can see it.
Yeah, let me know for sure. I would love to print some and get them out places. That's
Yeah.
cool. What else is cool happening on the other stations? Do you get to visit like the other stations as a part of your job? And
I haven't really been yet, but I've been to Waiakea before. I've been to Mililani. I've been to Waimanalo, and I've seen Poamohu. There are all different, like for example, like Mililani, which is in Waimea on Big Island. They got a lot of cows over there. A lot of their work focuses on genetics for cows, trying to improve the genetics of the cows in the state. I don't even know how much acres they got, 200 something, maybe more than that, but a lot of cows. And when I went up there, they also had tea, they had blueberries, they had proteas. They started I think a olive project out there. I'm not sure where that went, trying to look for new crops for Hawaii. Waiakea, similar to over here, they got Waiakea has a lot of tropical fruit trees. A lot of tropical fruit trees. Another thing that we got over here is we got some ornamental plants for the horticulture side. Ornamental plants, some heliconias, some ginger. Besides working with Emily Keach, I mean Emily Keach, I'm sorry, Emily Kirk, who's a sustainable organic extension agent. There's James Keach, who is the ornamental and the master gardener agent, and then Roshan Manidhar, who does invasive pests. And then we have a vacant livestock position. I'm not sure if it's out there or what, but we're supposed to have a livestock position here. And so
Yeah,
James.
that's been closed since I think like 2020
Yeah.
or earlier. Yeah. I know for a while they weren't sure if the funding was going to be permanent to reopen it, but I know that's a big gap for a lot of our folks.
We're gonna have a small ruminant workshop up here, and I think August 15th or something like that. August 15th, small ruminant workshop. And then James runs the Master Gardener class. They just wrapped up a class in May. I think the next one will probably be starting up again in February or so, and it's probably like a 3-month program, classwork, and then do some hands-on stuff outside.
I'm an alumni. I was
Oh yeah.
yeah, it's actually kind of it's funny. That's my first project I did for Malama Kauai. Was
Yeah.
I was a master gardener and I saw all the fruit falling on the ground in the orchards.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and I was tripping and I'm like, what are you guys doing? And that's how we started our village harvest program, was actually
Yeah.
the fruit dropping at the Sitar Research Station. And so me and a handful of the master gardeners just all got together and started getting it out to the community for a while. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was just sad to see it waste, but I mean, what that master gardener project did was like launch this program that now it's been, oh my God, it's almost 10 years
Yeah.
that Village Harvest program's been running our gleaning program and still harvesting tens of thousands of pounds of fruit for the
Yeah.
community every year. So
Yeah,
yeah,
cool.
master gardeners are fun people. I got to meet a lot of really amazing people. I highly recommend if anyone's interested. You get the full gamut of gardening classes and real deep science based. Some of it's, very technical. But they're great. I think they're underutilized too. People don't know there's like a master gardener helpline from Sitar.
Yeah.
Or you can actually get help if you see pest damage to your plant. You can like send them a picture and they'll research and they'll tell you like what's getting your plant and how to stop it and what some options are to treat it. Very
Yeah.
cool resource.
Yeah.
So the ruminant workshop, how do people find out about that if they want to? Said August 15th.
Yeah, I don't think the flyer for it came out yet, but Mele Oshiro from Big Island will be coming up to do that, and I'm not sure who else. Somebody else might be up with her, but
Is that mostly focused on like goats, sheep?
yeah, goats,
Hooved
sheep.
ruminant means like the hooved critters.
Yeah, the ones that get the rumen, the in their belly, the stomach,
Oh, okay.
digest
That's where it comes
vegetation.
from.
But I would say, Sitar, yeah, I don't even know. I'm kind of new, but I think Emily has a list, like a listserv where she sends out information. You could always actually, the best way to get a hold of anybody sitar related on Kauai is to Google our Lihue Extension office. We have an actual office in the state building where Extension is primarily based out of, but we have somebody to answer the phone and answer questions over there.
Yeah, it's if you go to cthr.hawaii.edu, that will take you to like the statewide area, and then you can click down and find Kauai County. There's everybody's contact information, phone numbers, emails. You guys also have the youth and intergenerational programs with Hallie Cristobal. She does some cool stuff, I think
Yeah,
cooking,
that is another person that I
recipe.
forgot to mention. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean we have, for being such a small island and a relatively small station compared to some of the islands with lots multiple stations, I mean, we have a great crew, you know, and I think Emily's probably been here the longest of any extension agent I've known in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. So she's been a wealth of information and such a good partner in the community too.
That's
So
cute.
excited to see you join the crew and bring new blood in there. Anything else you want to add or want people to know about what's going on out there, how they can get involved?
I would say just get a hold of Sitar if you have any questions. If it's production related kind of things, I think Extension could handle that. We're basically we maintain the station. What we do is we do facility maintenance, we do field maintenance. It includes a lot of mowing because we got about 90 acres out
Right.
here. So, and then we support with all the field research projects. And I mean, I think going along with the dean's vision, it's cool when we get like the Farmers Union or Farm Bureau, they have meetings up here, or see this place be put to use for its purpose. And it's always fun for us to get to meet people out in the community, farmers or whoever it is.
Break it up a
A lot of
little
times
bit.
there's just three of us up here, yeah, every day. So
Yep.
yeah. Hopefully
It's quiet
support,
and rainy out there. That quiet, rainy acreage you got. Cool.
yeah, I think that's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us and to everyone listening. You know, I think sitar is really one of our underutilized resources. I mean, our extension agents, the master gardeners, there's so much help out there with your commercial producer, you know, a home gardener, awesome group to follow along. They're on social media and things sometimes too. You can follow there. But thanks again, Derek, and everybody out there listening to our little trip to Wailua today. We appreciate you.